Now we have the third presentation in English, Peter Zoller, The Challenge of Protecting Fundamental Human Rights in the 21st Century. Please.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to congratulate FOP Mrs. DiMarzio for this excellent conference with this variety of experts. It's quite amazing. And it's true what Alessandro said, we meet in all kinds of places. I remember we met in the British Parliament,
yeah.
Right?
In Poland.
We met in Poland, we met in Brussels, we meet everywhere. And this is a very good feeling. I feel very at home here today. I have the privilege of the last speaker here, so whatever this means. I hope you can still focus. You're a very disciplined audience, and my approach will be from the journalistic viewpoint, and the focus will be, of course, human rights, but in particular religious freedom, and. Now, at this time, never before in history, people talk so much about human rights than right now. It's becoming a very urgent issue right now. When we refer to human rights, generally we think about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was drafted in New York, United Nations, in 1948. But to say universal human rights is a myth in reality, because many people don't know, many of our politicians don't know, that we have two sets of human rights. There's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but also there's another set of human rights since 1990. This is the Cairo Declaration of Human Rights in Islam, which is based on Sharia. Sharia and signed by the member states of the Organization for Islamic Cooperation, OEC. And these two are very different declarations, and they protect very different rights. And this is important to know, because if we talk about human rights with the people from Islam, we have to understand where they are coming from. Especially for politicians, very important to know. So I guess one of the reasons why FOP organized this right now in December is because we also had on the 10th of December, the International Day of Human Rights. And during December, many, many events are taking place by various NGOs regarding human rights. We could say that the Article 18, which is a leading article for my organization, Forum for Religious Freedom Europe, it summarizes the religious freedom issue. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom of change his religion or belief, and freedom alone or in community with others, and in public or private, to manifest his religion or belief, teaching, practice, worship, and observance. So the religious freedom advocates regard this Article 18 as the mother of human rights. The religious freedom as the mother of human rights, the basic freedom rights. It is very connected to Article 19, which speaks of the freedom of opinion and expression, and also the Article 20, the freedom of peaceful assembly and association. So if you take out religious freedom, the others also are in question. They collapse, we can say. Or it is the same with each one of these basic freedom rights. There's one fun fact. Religious freedom doesn't mean freedom to force everyone to follow your religion. And we have this big problem now. There's a global discussion on Islam and the apostasy law. Freedom to leave or discontinue membership in a religion or religious group. This you don't have in the Cairo Human Rights Declaration. To leave one's religion is called apostasy. This is also a fundamental part of religious freedom covered by the Article 18 in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. You are allowed to leave whenever you want. And the other problem, the other challenge, is what we have in Austria in particular, and in quite a few other European countries, state religions versus sects or cults. In countries with a state religion or a big majority of a particular religion, the challenge for the government and the people is not to oppress smaller religious sects. They deserve equal treatment. But it's not always done like this, even in the European Union. So this is the situation right now of the of religions in Europe. And we have dominance in the blue area, with the dominance of the Catholic Church, in the violet area, the dominance of the Protestant Church. Red is Orthodox Church, and green is Islam. Yellow is Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism. So this is then the challenge we have also. I'll talk about four different challenges, which is very particularly interesting for politicians or people who are in public office. Preserving respect for privacy and civil liberties, like freedom of association, in the context of terrorism and other security threats. The problem is that now, during this whole hype about Islam, the Islamists, I should say, not Islam, Islamists, we have to distinguish clearly, governments continuously cut down liberty rights of our society, constantly. You know? And it looks like if they're using this opportunity now, you know, to do what they really want. You know? Governments sacrifice privacy and civil liberties of its citizens under the pretext of terrorist threats. So we have, nobody summed it up like, Edward Snowden. He said, I can't allow the US government to destroy privacy and liberty and basic liberties. So we have to be aware of this, that this is going on. The other challenge is preserving the freedom of expression against pressure from governments and groups who are promoting tolerance and political correctness. In other words, free speech or hate speech, right? That's the free speech versus hate speech. This is the There's no human right that says that we are not to be offended. We are allowed to express our, in a free society, we are allowed to express our misgivings about a certain, certain people, certain religions, about our politicians. This is democracy, right? But it looks like this is becoming a dictatorship of political correctness in our modern society. Let me go to some extreme examples. One of them is in Pakistan, for example, the blasphemy law. I mean, this lady, her name is Asia Bibi, a young Christian woman from Pakistan, is currently on death row because of blasphemy, inciting the Islam. Her death sentence, imprisonment, has caused a worldwide outcry. Last year, over 1,000 blasphemy charges were filed in Pakistan. Over 1,000. Another one is what we face in Saudi Arabia. I mean, these are extreme cases, but there are smaller cases in our own countries, in our own society. In Saudi Arabia, the most famous case right now, and he's, I must say, he's one of my heroes, Raif Badawi. He's a blogger. He's nothing else than a journalist, a blogger, you know. He was sentenced to 10 years jail and 1,000 lashes. What was his crime? His crime was he blocked critical posts about the Saudi Arabian government, you know, and about the restrictive laws on human rights and religions. And the fun fact about this is, you know, his lawyer who defended him got also charged 15 years prison for defending him. I mean, fun fact, it's not really a fun fact, but very recently, just a few weeks ago, Badawi's wife, Ensa Haider, got the Sakharov Prize on his behalf. Journalists, you know, this is a big problem. Journalists may be bad guys in our corners here, when we are discussing here about journalists, but they are not everywhere the bad guys. They are really in some restrictive societies, totalitarian societies. They're doing a great job. And this is the. I'm a member of the Reporters Without Borders, this human rights organization for journalists. And there are in the index for 2015, Norway is number one in freedom rights on the good scale. And North Korea is number 179 and Eritrea 180. And Italy is about is number 73. Sorry. it's interesting, Italy. And regarding this free speech issue in Germany, in Bavaria, close to Austria, just recently, somebody organized a demonstration against building a mosque. This guy got fined a few thousand euros for saying bad things about Islam. But this is also not correct, actually. It's against the human rights. It's within the human rights to build a mosque. It's also within the human rights to criticize. And then three is the challenge of preventing discrimination while societies are becoming more diverse and as a result of refugees or social changes. So we have Islamic, you know, dressing. So it's very, very, anyone with a headscarf suffers in our Western society. But it's their human right to wear a headscarf. Of course, we are talking about burqaban, but burqaban is the one on the very right. This is a burqa, this blue, you know, dress. But generally, headscarves, you know, they are not offensive. And, it is allowed to wear headscarves, and this is also allowed to. It is not allowed to forbid a headscarf, really, within the seen from the viewpoint of human rights. So in the fourth challenge is the challenge of upholding international human rights standards in the UN, United Nations, under the pressure from authoritarian states like China, Russia, and members of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, all seek to weaken the system of human rights. If you look at this, these are the member of the Human Rights Council in 2016. The red ones, in a sense, regarding human rights, is the rouge countries, Algeria, China, Cuba. They will be residing on the Human Rights Council. Morocco, Namibia, Russian Federation, Saudi Arabia, and so on. So we are very grateful to have the OSCE. Since 2002, FORF has been regularly highlighting human rights violations in the framework of the OSCE. And Just recently we have criticized, our 4F team has criticized France and also Austria and Hungary and Germany. The European Union is now has been grading since 2 years. They have been grading a strategy for foreign policy. It's called FORP. And this is the charter, or this is the chart of the 50 most persecuting countries. Christians are still the most persecuted religious community. The first is North Korea, the last is Cuba. So what we have the problem in Europe, the difference between the theory and the practice. You know, the drinking wine and preaching water. Europe wants to have a foreign policy, wants to emphasize religious freedom, but within its own borders, it's not quite as strict. So, example, Hungary, for example. 2011, Hungary, Viktor Orban forbid 200 small churches after he got his two-thirds majority in Hungary. Or, when the Chinese leader comes, human rights is for most European countries no topic at all. Or Islamophobia. In Switzerland, there was a referendum on the building the minaret, and so on. And now we come to Austria. We have now a big scandal. Islamic kindergartens. There are 250 Islamic kindergartens. And in some of them, they spotted Quran education, and the kids are radicalized. Our Minister of Foreign Affairs, this young guy, 29 years old, he is really not very amused about this, so he launched an investigation. In Austria, let me just tell you about Austria, if I have still a few minutes time. Yeah? 2 minutes. In Austria, there has been a remarkable proliferation of anti-sect bureaucracies. Austria, with a population of 8.4 million, has no less than 29 anti-sect offices operating in the country. Proportionally, this marks an unmatched record in Europe and even on a global scale, including the Bundessektenstelle, which is the federal sect office. There are 4 state-sponsored sect observation offices, 10 Catholic sect offices, 7 Protestant sect offices, 1 private sect office, and 7 offices for family counseling with a special emphasis on sectarian issues. In 1998, Austria established this federal sect observatory office with 6 employees, and they receive a state sponsorship, state financing of 500,000 euros. Per year, annually, 500,000 euros. And what do they produce? Absolutely nothing. They are just basically creating a bad image for religious minority groups. They are observing and they have, etc. So, in the Austrian law on religion is three-tiered. First, religions with a full status of privilege. These are 17 religions in Austria. And then the other stage is confessional communities. So far there are 8 confessional communities. And then there are around 600 religious associations, so-called sects, who cooperate... corporate religious freedom is not guaranteed by the state for these 600 religious groups. And there are signs of improvement in a way how the government treats religious minority groups. And I think Forif made a good job in this. So I am praising my own organization right now. A recent case in point, the Unification Church of Austria has, after 40 years of state persecution, state-sanctioned persecution become the eighth registered confessional community now in Austria. And this has been involved. Some top constitutional experts have been involved. I myself have been involved in this. And it's now 4 years we have been working on this. And it's a very difficult, has been a very difficult process. But now this has been achieved. So these are the eight confessional communities. Let me just conclude. I mean, there would be a lot to discuss, but in Austria, it's almost impossible. I was very impressed when I heard here that you are going to propose new laws. In Austria, it's almost unthinkable that you could propose a new law, you know, on religion. It's the Austrian way is, okay, just don't make a new law, just, you know, be quiet about it. That's the Austrian way. Just, you know, nobody eats the soup as hot as it is cooked. It's a saying in Austria. And rub it, you know, under the carpet. So, let me just conclude with some quotes. I mean, this is one of my favorite quotes from Mahatma Gandhi. Each civilization should be judged by the way it treats her minorities. So we can see ourselves what kind of society we're living in, whether we are really very civilized or not. Or Henri Dunant, the first Peace Nobel Prize winner and also the founder of the Red Cross, he said, we are all brothers. Basically, if he has one God, we are all his children, we are all brothers. And he was not politically correct at that time. Today, he would say, we are all brothers and sisters. Right. And finally, Martin Luther King, he said, we have to live together as brothers and sisters or perish together as fools. Thank you very much.
Thank you.